Yes, of course. Burl Bearer. I've known a few writers who were rogues and vagabonds. And I'm Roger Moore. I didn't supply the microphone.
All right. Live from the gleaming Streamline Studios of OutlawRadioLive.com, nestled in our secret bunker somewhere in the Los Angeles area, the following program is produced by Magic Matt Allen on the Outlaw Radio Network. I am the legendary Burl Bearer. Watering my legend. Sitting next to me is Mark Boyer, fact checker, co-host, and joining us on the phone, the beautiful, brilliant, and talented Dominique Simone. Dominique, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And I've read your book, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is excellent. I suggest that anyone who is interested in her life or life in the world of adult films and before them, after them, and how the hell do you deal with all that?
A Star Is Porn.
A Star Is Porn is the name of it. It's available in paperback, maybe hardback. I have it on my Kindle for easy reading anytime, anywhere. What was your life like at 18?
At 18 years old, I basically came out to Los Angeles from West Virginia. I had lived in Georgia previously, and I came out from West Virginia on a Greyhound bus. I was actually a little bit younger than 18. I had just finished high school, and I came out to this big city, you know, without any direction. You know, I came out on a scholarship to go to school, so I didn't really know what to expect when I got out to Los Angeles, and it was quite an experience for me.
Well, there's many roads you could take in L.A. It's like the world has shrunk. There's everything from high class to low class exploitation, depending on what corner you're standing on and the people you meet. And how did that go for you at 18 or 17 and a half?
Well, I came out to Los Angeles on a scholarship to go to school, and I actually did go to school for a little bit, and it was just really difficult being out here, being young, and my family not really supporting me coming out to Los Angeles. I had other decisions of other places I could have gone that weren't so far from home, and I decided to work at a place downtown Los Angeles where you could, like, dance. It wasn't stripping. It was basically lonely guys could come in and pay you to just, like, for your company to sit with them and talk to them.
Like a Diamond Dance sort of place, more or less.
But it was a dance place where they played music, but it was basically for lonely guys to come in and just talk to women, and, you know, they could, I guess they would, like, there was a clock-in card, and you could clock in, and they spent a certain amount of time talking to you. You couldn't leave the establishment. You just sat in there, and you just sat and talked to them, like, if you were at a table. And that's how it started out for me. And I was in school, and I was working there, and I had another job at a department store, and things just got really crazy, and I really needed to make money, and I saw an advertisement for figure modeling, which I thought was, like, you know, just bathing suit modeling, but it was for nude modeling, and that's really how I got started. My first shoot was for Hustler magazine.
Hmm. And that went well?
Yes, it did. It did. It was a girl shoot, and that was the only twist, because I had never been in a situation like that with a girl, but we made it work. We made it work. And, of course, you know, Hustler was one of the more upscale of the hardcore magazines. You know, it was Penthouse, Hustler. So I had a really good start with my modeling.
Mark has a question for you.
What did that job pay?
I think for the day, I think I made like $1,500, maybe $2,000.
Yay, that's impressive.
Yes.
I mean, in today's money, that's a lot more than that. So that's very good payday for you. If I were you at that time, I would have been very impressed.
Yes, it was a very good payday for me.
So that kind of got you started. Now, did you encounter, at that time, was there any disparity between being African-American? Was there any discrimination in that field at that time?
No, I would say not at that time, because I entered the industry right when interracial sex was like the thing.
Good.
So it was like the early 90s, and yeah, interracial sex was like the thing.
Yeah, the 90s, looking back, it would seem to me, and I think your book confirms it, that the 90s was probably if one was going to be in the adult industry, the 90s was the time to be in it.
I think that I am very happy to have experienced the business at that time. It was a lot of fun. It was glamorous. The caliber of girls was different. It's just a lot different today. The business is so oversaturated with girls. They have the cam girls, and anybody can be an adult video actress by just pulling out your camera. So back in the early 90s, it was more of an exclusive type business. Not anyone could get in and be a star. And it was, you know, you had to go through auditions and castings, and we had casting calls. So it was a much more different time in that era.
Yeah, we had, or actually Matt Allen, our producer, does the Matt Allen's Outlaw Radio show immediately after ours from 3 to 6. And there was one day we had on Matt's show, one of the executives from Vivid. And I don't recall her name, but I do remember her saying that at one time, a female in the industry had, I believe it was 3 years to make all the money she was going to make. By the time the 90s were up and going and over, it had shrunk down to a matter of like 12 to 13 months to make the money you were going to make.
Don't you find that statistic a little hard to swallow?
That a bump. We needed a rim shot there.
Or a rim job.
Yes, or one of the two. The ability to make money and establish your career after the 90s really went down. So when you decided to get out of the industry, when was that? Was that after the 90s and the 2000s started?
Yes, it was in the 2000s, and I was fortunate because I left at the top of my game, and I didn't just do the films. I feature danced, so we had a lot of different options to make money. We could do feature dancing. We could, you know, do the movies, of course, and bookstore signings. So, and I was very fortunate because I was under contract with about three different companies. So I had year contracts with them.
Well, you were very fortunate. I imagine on some shoots, you were probably making a hell of a lot more money than some of the other performers. Am I correct?
Yes. I made really good money. And the thing about being under contract is that, you know, you had a set, you knew that you were going to be working every month. You had maybe two movies to shoot a month and two covers, and you knew that you were going to be getting a salary every month. And I will say that there were some times when I wasn't under contract where I made more money than I made under contract, because a lot of the companies that wanted to hire me when I was under contract, they couldn't hire me. So as soon as I came off of my contract, I probably have about five or six different companies wanting to shoot me. But I was very fortunate to be able to have these contract deals with some pretty big companies like Leisure Time and what were called Video Exclusives at the time, Video Team, which was a really big company that specialized in a lot of interracial type, parody type movies. So I was just very fortunate to have big companies like that, Heatwave and Arrow Video, that put me under contract.
Now, if I correct me if I'm mistaken, but unlike some other performers in the film industry, many adult performers get absolutely no royalties from their films. It's like, you know, pay for play, you do the job, and that's all the money you're going to get. Was that your situation as well?
I think that was most of the girls' situations. I only know of one situation where there were royalties that were paid, and I think that was with Tracy Lords when she came back and did the Tracy I Love You after she turned 18. And she was in a position where she could do that. And I think maybe during the days where Monseca was working, and I think that they had more options to get royalties. But in the late 90s, the business changed. Once the dial-up, everything changed from dial-up, and people were able to access the internet a little bit better, then our business went downhill, because all of these guys that were going out and buying these $200 DVDs, and they were able to basically download our movies online for free.
Right. That kind of hurt. That hurt.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine paying a subscription to a site these days when there are so many tube sites that you can get pretty much anything.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I was just online the other day. I was on, maybe it was like Pornhub, and I went to look at one of my movies, and I was like, oh my gosh, this movie has over 1 million views, but, you know, we're not getting any type of commission from that. And I just did an interview with Jasmine St. Clair. You know, I did her podcast, and we talked about that.
I listened
and
to that.
And she was like, you know, we should be getting royalties from that, but we're not.
Yeah, well,
that's the magic of that model release you sign. That model release, basically, you're signing your soul away.
That's quite, well, it's even the same. That's why they have these SAG after strikes for the performers. Like the people in Star Trek weren't getting a dime off of the reruns, because you only get paid for the first three broadcasts, and that was it. It affects everyone.
We had one of Matt's good friends, Greg Brady, over here. He brought with him a handful of residual checks from the TV show, 20 cents, 80 cents, 90 cents, 15 cents. And he says he hasn't cashed these in years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's even the same with motion pictures. I used to be the significant other of Judy Faye, who was the significant other of Joey Faye, the famous comedian who created Slowly I Turn, Inch by Inch, Step by Step.
Niagara Falls.
And he performed in a great many movies, including Once Upon a Time in America and many others. And he passed away, and she would get his royalty checks, residual checks. And to be like, 18 cents, 20 cents, $1.80 for a movie that ran on HBO. Getting paid, but it was negligible. I got a royalty check just this past month for 49 cents.
It's interesting. I got a royalty bill for $800, but I don't know what it was for.
Yeah.
I worked in the banking industry for many years, and we were in a very large meeting about how we could make more money and save money. And little snot-nosed Marky says, hey, we're sending out checks to customers for less than what it costs us to produce and mail. Why don't we wait and not mail those checks until it's more than what it costs us to mail them?
Good thinking.
Good thinking. Mark, you can go now.
Yeah, well, you know, our business is $1 billion a year. I mean, a multi-billion-dollar-a-year business generates so much business. The number one sellers in the world is sets, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yep.
So we generate so much money every year. So I would think that if we were getting commission checks, they would be pretty large.
Yeah, they would be. That's why you don't get them. That's the reason, Dominique, right there. Now, I find it interesting yet disturbing that the AVN, now you're in the AVN Hall of Fame, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I went in 2007.
As is Chasey Lane, as is Bonita Saint, and there was another one that slips my mind that I know. And people in the Hall of Fame do not get free tickets to the AVN, and which I think is shameful. I think that if you're in the Hall of Fame, you should at least get free tickets to the AVN. So one year I had to get old Ron Jeremy and had him get Bonita Saint into the AVN event, and she's in the Hall of Fame. But she couldn't get in unless someone helped her get in. So Ron Jeremy helped her.
That's an interesting topic.
Well, actually, you can get free tickets to the AVN. You just have to be at the convention center to get your actual tickets. But this year was a lot different. I hadn't been to AVN in a really long time, and this year was just different because not only could you pay for your entrance into the AVN Awards, but you could pay for your red carpet ticket as well. So I was basically on the red carpet with people that had basically paid extra money to just walk the red carpet, and that was really interesting for me because the last time I had walked the carpet for the AVN, it was just a lot more exclusive and there were a lot less girls. I walked the carpet with 700 people, and I was the last photograph to be taken on the red carpet because I chose to get there at like 7:30. It started at 4:30, and I just remember the last time I had gone, the award show started at 9, and we went in at 7:30, and it was just basically, you know, it was just very easy, but it was just 700 people in front of me, and all
had bought tickets to do so. So there's a nice cash flow.
Not just people that had bought tickets, but I was in there with, I was there with people that had been in the industry for a long time. You know, a lot of stars standing in that same line, and it was different than it was when I was there years ago. It was just much more of a star-studded event, and the business was different. The girls were different. When I was in the business, it was like myself and, you know, Heather Hunter and Ashlyn Gere, Raquel Darien. It was just a different, Janet Jagby. It was just a different
feel different, to it.
Yes, it was different. There's a lot of cam girls right now that they enter the business and after about a year, they're like, I'm a star. And it takes a lot more than that to be a star. I don't think that I saw a lot of star quality there, but everything's so different now.
Yeah, all industries change. I was in Matt and I were in radio back when radio meant something.
You were baby DJs.
Back when radio DJs were mini stars in many markets, and things change.
Like the Howard Sterns and like that?
Yeah, but before you had your Howard Sterns on a local level, DJs were stars. They had groupies and followers and fan clubs.
And they actually made a living.
Lions and Tigers and Bears.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I remember some of the DJs that were like pretty big DJs out here in Los Angeles. And
well, Magic Matt Allen would be one.
Yeah.
Along with Rick Dees.
Yeah.
Yes, Rick Dees, of course.
Yeah. And that's the way it used to be. We can always talk about our glory days.
No.
Yeah.
I wanted to follow up on Ron Jeremy. I understand that he directed your first scene.
Yes. He didn't direct my first scene, but he directed one of my very first movies for Leisure Time, which was called Video Exclusives. We had a lot of contract girls. They had myself. They had Savannah. A lot of the bigger breasted girls, Terry Weigel. So they had a great big deal of girls that they had under contract. So Ron Jeremy was one of the directors that worked with Leisure Time, and I think they used him for the John Wayne Bobbitt movie, and he was doing a lot of stuff for them. So he did direct me in a few of my beginning movies.
So what was he like?
I will tell you that the side of Ron that everybody's talking about, I didn't get to experience that because he was always really nice to me. I think he was actually pretty frightened of me.
Maybe you were taller than he was.
Really, he was always really, really nice to me. And there were many times when I would go and go down to the Rainbow Room and hang out with him. And we'd be sitting with, like, Axl Rose and Slash. And people would just come up to him, and they'd just be in, like, these rock guys. They were just, like, in awe because he always had beautiful women with him. And he always had this charisma about him. So the stories that I'm hearing about him, I never saw that side of him. I don't even know about that.
Yeah, well, same here. Yeah,
we had Ron, or Matt had Ron on the show a number of times. Matt was friends with the owner of Screwing, and he would bring people over, and I found him to be an affable, nice, intelligent fellow.
Yeah, when I called him to help out Benita Saint, he was just as friendly and affable as could be. He stepped right up to the plate, helped her out, and. You know, that was very nice of him to do, take time out of his busy schedule. And
Same here. We went a lot at the parties up there, and he was just, I just didn't see what everyone is talking about, so I can't even discuss that. I don't have anything to say about any of that.
Well, as you and I both know, once you become any type of celebrity or cross that line to be from being a private person to a public person, which we both are, being as I'm an author and do radio, etc., there are things about me on the internet that are absolute BS. In fact, I wish some of it were true. There is one website that says I'm worth $16 million and I made my fortune with Yeezy sneakers. Now, I have never even worn a pair, let alone invested in them.
But what about the giant Jewish conspiracy?
Oh, also, I'm part of the International Jewish Conspiracy, and I'm still waiting for my check.
Well, you know, I think the space lasers you invented.
Yeah, the space lasers. I even wearing my Jewish space laser T-shirt today.
Well, you remember when they had the shows like Hard Copy and
right,
Current Affair and all
right,
of that?
Yeah.
You know, the tabloids and tabloids business is a really big business. I was just standing in line today at a store and I saw Star Magazine and I was like, oh my God, they still make these things? Yeah. So
they still do, and they still have a lot of crap that isn't true, and people believe it.
I don't know where the stories come from either. I don't know if people just buy these stories from people. They don't really, I don't think they really investigate to see if the stuff is true. It's just like you tell someone something and they go and tell it to TMZ or tell it to, right now it's TMZ, but they go and tell it to all of these places and then it's just like news. Anytime there's a story that's published about you anywhere, it's online, it's basically, you're basically marked.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, if you really want research journalism, it's the Inquirer.
Yeah, they do actually research their stories.
Yeah, because they're tired of getting their asses
sued. Yes. Carol Burnett sued
I've
them.
I've had my share of being in those magazines, the Hard Copies and the Inquirers, and no one ever came and talked to me.
No, of course not. They're liable to get the truth. That's why I recommend they read your book, A Star Is Born.
And then they can be salacious without being incorrect. Famous couple separates is the headline, but you read the story. One went to the produce section, yeah. And the other went to the hot food aisle.
That's where they
and
separate.
That's why they separated.
Yeah, it really is amazing some of the stuff that I read about me, and I'm nowhere near as famous as you are. And I'm going, I did what? When? With who? It's rather amazing. There's also, changing the subject matter here, there's a great deal of emphasis in your book on the stress and cost to you, both physically, financially, and emotionally, of keeping your body and your image intact in the industry. Plastic surgery, etc. And unfortunately, you had some plastic surgery adventures that were not exactly to your best health.
Yes, I did. I think that anytime you decide that you're going to go under the knife, there are certain things that you should know that could possibly happen. And I had a few things that happened that were not very good, but you know, I pulled through. It's just you got to make sure that you find the right doctor, and I see that a lot of girls are like taking off and going out of the country and having procedures done, and you just have to, you know, really research the doctors, and it's not even about researching the doctors. It's just about you. There's certain things that can happen when you have any kind of surgery. There's certain things that can happen, and you never know how your body's going to react to anesthesia. And that was with me. I had an adverse reaction to anesthesia. So you never know, but that's something that when you sign, just like when we sign those model releases, right, that's something that when you sign to go in and have a procedure, they tell you that this is something that can occur if you go under. And I just had some bad reactions, but I'm lucky to have pulled through. And, you know, when you're in a business where you're being judged on your appearance and on your body, and you're constantly being seen in that manner, it's very stressful, very, very stressful. And I was one that I wanted to represent myself well, and I had to be thin, I had to be in shape, and it was just crazy. It was just a lot of work, and I put I invested a lot of money into my career with surgeries, with not just that, but hair and makeup, costumes. And I invested a lot of money in myself.
Now, I found it amusing that you aren't exactly a great dancer in, shall we say, the African-American modes.
Yes, I was more of a... I started feature dancing, and I actually started feature dancing at clubs that did not even feature African-American dancers until I came along. And I was not, per se, a dancer. I was more of a sensual mover.
That's a good way to put it.
Sensual mover. But I got casted in a lot of like music videos that were hip-hop and rap videos with people that were actual dancers. And I actually... I auditioned for In Living Color, thinking that, you know, hey, I could go and audition for this because I'm a star, because I'm pretty. And then it was a lot more to that audition than I thought.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that, reading that in your book. You do have a good sense of humor about yourself. And I must ask, you are known for having rather large breasts, exceptionally large. Did that bother your back at all to have that weight?
Later on, yes. I remember when I signed my contract with Video Exclusives, and they had a lot of the bigger breasted girls, like Lisa Lips and Nikki Knockers, girls like that.
Nikki Knockers?
Nikki Knockers, Lisa Lips. I can't even remember some of...
I bet that's a stage name.
Yeah, those were the stage names. And when I say the bigger breasted girls, I'm talking about like beach ball breasts. And when I signed my contract with them, they wanted me to go bigger. I didn't go as big as they wanted me to go, but I just remembered telling the owner that my back, I was just like 105 pounds, and I had these huge, they weren't watermelons, but more like cantaloupes on my chest. And it got to the point where one day I woke up and I couldn't even get out of bed. And I was like, I really need to get these smaller. I can't even stand, And I just remember the owner saying, can we get three more covers?
Before that, before you do that, can we do one more photo? Covers. We'll prop you up. Like a mannequin. We'll stick something up your tuckers to hold you up while we take these shots.
So we get three more covers, and I fulfilled my contract, and then I went in and I had them reduced. But I was never a big girl. I was always very petite, so big breasts on me, you know, super big.
Amazing.
I was like a size one, so I had these big kettlebells on my chest, so they were like super big, yes.
When you were dancing, did you have to deal with house girls?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I did. I did, and that's the worst because we were the person that was bringing in the crowd for them to make more money. But the house girls were just, like, so mean to us as the feature dancers. And I didn't have too many problems with the house girls because, of course, I would come in and do maybe three shows a day, a morning, maybe like a 12, a 5, and a 11. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with them. But yeah, they were kind of not too nice to the feature dancers.
a little bit of professional jealousy.
I find that interesting because it's against their best interest.
I would think so too. But yeah, that's what it was like. Every girl was competition to them. And I remember going to Vegas and going to this strip club and seeing 100 feature dancers in one club because they were all just as beautiful as whoever they would have their feature dancing. So I couldn't imagine having to compete with 50 or 100 other girls in a club. Yeah. I was fortunate to go in and be able to do my job and leave and not have to deal with that all day.
What was that, Mark?
What's your worst club memory?
My worst club memory.
Maybe you were lucky to get out with your life.
I'll tell you what my best one was. I remember being at a club in Dallas, in Texas, and I remember the owner of the club coming and telling me, hey, there's three guys that would like for you to come and sit at their table, and they're one of our best patrons. And so I was really ready to get out of there. I was done for the night. But, you know, I went and hung out with them, and it was three guys that played for the Dallas Cowboys. Huh. And I was able to actually, one of them big. Oh, my, they're amazing. And amazing rings, amazing. And you know, I saw the guys when I came off of my set, but I really didn't know who they were. So that was a really fun experience. I sat with them and drank champagne and hung out hung out a little bit afterwards. And I think it was during the time when they used to play every day. They used to play every Thanksgiving. Right. And it was so crazy because they had a game, like maybe the next day. And it was just so crazy how they were out and just like partying and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, you guys have to go and play football tomorrow.
A lot of these sports teams.
One of my better experiences. I didn't have too many really horrible experiences on the road. I think that I talk about in my book my experience when I was in New York. And I think that was kind of the most traumatizing ones because I was over at Show World, which was in the middle of Times Square, and at the time that's when everything over there was just like the emporium of sets. It was like the McDonald's of sets. Everything was sets. And I was just placed in the middle of this club that had a lot of different levels to it. You know, they had the girls that were in the booths. They had us on the stage feature dancing. Then they had the they had the guys, and then they had the transsexuals. So they had all these different levels. And for me to be exposed to that at a young age and see all of that all at once was kind of overwhelming. But you learn really fast in our industry.
Yeah. Yes.
There's not a lot that I have not seen, and so it really makes you grow up really fast. So my first experience for dancing was being in a place like that.
Yeah, that was a big learning curve.
To other places like Disneyland, because they didn't have all of that going on. They didn't have the set shows and the video store and all of that.
Yeah,
all
it's kind of like being in Amsterdam or something all of a sudden in the red light district.
I've never been to Amsterdam, but from what I've seen, it was equivalent to that. You know, you walk in and there's a guy. There's like it's the circus, and he has this bullhorn, and he's like, "We've got girls, we've got guys, we've
got like from dusk till dawn."
and it was just like it was like that all day. And to walk into this auditorium, and I'm going there at noon. I'm coming in from the daylight, going into this place that's just the super dark with neon lights, and you wouldn't be able to tell whether it was daylight or nighttime once you got in there. It's a totally different world.
Very bizarre. Speaking of bizarre, as I'm sure you discovered, many of the people working in the industry, and illness is more contagious than health, severe drug problems and alcohol problems. A lot of people coming into the industry that were damaged in shipping and handling, shall we say. And I'm sure you encountered a great deal of that amongst your friends.
I think that coming into the entertainment business in general, a lot of girls leave small towns and come out to Los Angeles in search of to be a star. Some of them may not have wanted to be in adult films. I mean, it wasn't my plans that I was going to come out to Los Angeles and be a porn star. I wanted to come out and I wanted to meet stars, and I was a big Michael Jackson fan. I wanted to meet Michael, and I did. I met Michael. I met Prince. I met a lot of people, but I did not come out to Los Angeles to be a porn star. It's just part of the game. You know, there's a lot of drugs out here, and it's easy to be misled if you come into contact with the wrong people. And yes, there are some girls that come in with their demons, but there are a lot of women that were in our industry that did not have that background. There's a lot of girls that were working their way through school. There's a lot that were nurses that had regular jobs that did this industry because that's really what they wanted to do. But in the entertainment industry in general, there's a lot of drugs. There's a lot.
There's a lot, even if you aren't in the entertainment industry.
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah, and some people can deal with that, and other people it's just their metabolisms or their mindset or whatever. It just becomes massive. For other people, it's just an evening's entertainment. It really varies.
Exactly.
It really varies.
Did any of the girls
people tended to think that the porn business was us sitting around doing drugs all day and boozing and having sex. And actually, the business industry was nothing like that. There was no drug use or no alcohol allowed on the sets. Anything that occurred that was like that was something that was done in that person's personal life.
Right.
And it maybe ventured over to their career because it started to affect them in that area where maybe they showed up to work and they were under the influence. But none of that stuff actually took place.
No, because you have to be able to perform, and you have to be able to do the scenes, and you know what it's like to have to work because it was a job.
Yeah, and for us women, it was a much easier job than for the guys. The guys actually have to do a lot of performing.
Yes.
So for us, it was much easier. It is much easier to cover up stuff like that, drug use or any type of, because we didn't actually have to produce wood, and we didn't have to do all the work that the guys had to do. So,
do the guys make as much money?
No,
yells Matt from personal experience.
No, they don't.
No, that's why they get into the back.
The guys, they're written them to see the girls, right?
Right. That's right. Now, the strange thing is that I was never into watching porn, and so I wind up working with women who were in the industry, in the advertising, promotion, marketing, etc., and I'd never seen any of their films. I hadn't seen any of yours, nor Chasey Lane's or Bernita's or the other women that I've done work for. And one of them, whose name I won't mention, said when I started working with her, she says, you know, she says, I do barter. And I said, I don't. I said, I can't pay for your advertising with sexual favors. You know, the gentleman I'm going to be doing business with doesn't want to have sex with me.
So, you know, Chasey, I love Chasey. I hung out with her a few times. She's
great fun. She's been on the show here with my Matt show. She's supposed to be on Matt show, but she showed up. I just heard from her the other day, as a matter of fact.
I haven't years. I haven't seen her in a long time, but I had a lot of fun with her, and I remember when she was signed with Vivid, and I was just like, this girl is one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen. Those piercing blue eyes, and
she's very clever. She's very clever. She was a great, great interview. A lot of fun, and I enjoy her. In fact, she rescued me one night. I got stranded in Van Nuys, California. With no transportation, who can I call to rescue me? And the first name that came up in my contacts list was Chasey. And I hadn't even heard from her in a year or two. And I called her number, and bless her heart, she came and gave me a ride all the way home.
Well, very nice.
Very nice of her. So that's how we reconnected. In fact, like I said, I heard from her just the other day.
Oh, amazing. I haven't heard from her in a really long time. There's a lot of girls that have kind of fallen off.
The radar, cosmic radar.
A lot of girls that are no longer with us, and especially from my era, and it was really nice to go to the award show, and I saw Christy Canyon there. I saw Seiko was there at James Bartolet's booth, and it was just amazing to see catch up and see. Some of the people that I hadn't seen in a really long time amongst all these newer faces. There were some recognizable faces. Brittany Andrews, I saw her. And it was really nice to just be able to see some of the old familiar faces. I was up with T.T. Boy. Lexington Steel came through James Bartolet's booth.
Now, you became a nurse, which I think is a wonderful profession. I was so pleased to see that. And, and so much your love for Michael Jackson. You have a child. What did you name him? Michael Jackson? Jackson Michael.
I named him Jackson Michael.
Yeah, I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, my mind just went blank. I watched her HBO show the other night. She was in Maverick with Mel Gibson. Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster named her kid Charles Kane Foster, as in Charles Foster Kane, you know, Citizen Kane. I thought that was clever. Yeah, I worked with, we did Maverick, Mel Gibson and James Garner. She was great fun.
So you had a lot of, like, feature type work, haven't you?
Yeah, she was great.
Netflix?
It was on HBO Max.
HBO Max?
Well, what is she? Oh, it's Hulu.
No, it's True Detective.
True Detective,
yeah. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's great.
I was fortunate enough to work with Gregory Dark, who did a lot of things for HBO and Cinemax. And And I got my first SAG card from doing a movie with him and myself and a girl by the name of Julie Strange. She was the heavy metal and so I had my share of working and doing movies like that too. It was a lot of fun.
So do you mentioned that you have 4 children?
Yes, I do.
So how do relationships work within the industry? It's got to be difficult to have someone outside of the work, and at the same time you're having sex 3-4 times a week with somebody else.
I retired from the business when I was 30 years old. My son was 3, so a lot of my relationships that I had were with people that were in entertainment, but not the adult film business. Of course, if you're in the entertainment business, you're around entertainers, then you're probably going to end up hooking up with one.
Right. Yes, that's the world you're in. You know?
Yes. It's who you're surrounded by. That's why you see a lot of actors dating one another. But relationships are very difficult in general, and especially in our business where you have so many eyes on you. And I tried being in a relationship with someone that was an actor, and it was a struggle for us both because we were both big in the industry, and we had a lot of eyes on us, and it was just we're like an open book.
Yeah,
we didn't really have a private life because of what we did. So just relationships in general are very difficult.
There's a favorite conversation I had with Jodie Foster one day, and I said,
"You're on the set of Maverick, right?"
Yeah, and I said, "The difficulty in dating an actor," I says, "how do you know when they say they love you that they're not acting?" She just gave me the weirdest look.
I dated an actor that was a very good actor, and sometimes I would even question whether or not he was for real. That's how good of an actor
he was. Right, that was my point.
Was that Tom?
Yeah.
I met Tom through Chasey.
She Tom was saying,
"Oh, you knew I was talking about Tom."
Yeah. Yeah, I met Tom through Chasey. She was staying with him at his place in Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you may have been in his bed then. I don't know. Because there was a black woman in his bed when I met him. but I didn't pause to find her name or whatever. I just wanted to thank him for letting me into his lovely place. And he was sitting on the toilet reading a Rolling Stone or something. And I met him again when he had moved to somewhere else. And we knew the same people, but we hadn't spent any real time together. So he came into where I was with Christina Hall, who I happened to be with that day. And he said, "You're Burl." And I said, "Yes, I am."
Oh, wow.
And he said, "So you're Burl." I go, "Yeah, I am." He said, "You got anything?" So
that's that was such a shame with him.
Yeah, but he had more of a baby face in person than he did on screen. He had such an adorable baby face.
Tom, I loved him so much, and he was truly so talented, and I could stay up for days just talking to him about just his he had the most amazing stories, and he was such a good storyteller, the way he illustrated how everything went down. And he was just amazing. There was sometimes when he would get a script and he wouldn't read it until the morning of his audition, and he landed everything that I knew that he was auditioning for. And he was just an amazing, amazing man.
Yeah.
And what a horrible loss. I was devastated.
And my former co-host, Howard Lapidus, who unfortunately passed away.
Manager to the star,
was executive producer of Celebrity Rehab. And
oh, my goodness.
And he arranged for that whole thing with Heidi and Tom and Sean Young, too. He made a nice deal with Sean Young. He promised her there wouldn't be anything embarrassing for her.
Oh, my goodness. I never saw him on Celebrity Rehab, but I didn't watch him in a lot of things. I just recently saw Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
There have been many times where I've been at his home and he's like, oh, this is my new movie. And he showed me the trailer. And then I look at him and I go, oh my goodness. Sometimes I can't tell if you're acting or if you're for real, because he was like that same, a lot of the parts that he played, it was a part of him.
Yeah. They find it within themselves. Somewhere within themselves, they find that.
And it must be nice being able to do something where you can just be yourself and not really. He just tended to land those roles where they would take a little bit of him out of there, and he just played the roles perfectly.
Yeah, he was a great actor, and he was a fun person. And the time I spent with him, although minimal, was very enjoyable. So
yes, very very a lot of fun, a lot of amazing stories, and just a great person.
Yeah, well, you've been fortunate to meet a lot of great people, some interesting people, some people you'd probably rather never meet again.
Yes. I was very fortunate to meet a lot of, like, really interesting people.
And so your life now, you've got this book out that's getting rave reviews.
A
Star is Porn, available through Amazon, where I got mine on Kindle and carry it with me everywhere.
Oh, thank you.
And I recommend people buy it. And I mentioned to our good friend Leonard Bushell, I'm on the advisory board of Writers in Treatment, which sponsors the Experience, Strength, and Hope Awards.
And the Rail Recovery Film Festival.
And we help writers get treatment if they want treatment, recovery. And I was recommending his book for his consideration, their consideration.
Great. Thank you.
Because, every year they give an award for the book, whatever, that recovery memoir of greatest impact. And I was recommending yours for consideration.
Thank you.
So there.
From your book, what do you want people to take away?
Well, there's a lot of misconceptions about the industry and what people are like in the industry. And I will say that I held back a little bit. And as I went back, I wrote the book, but as I went back and I actually read it out loud, I was just like, wow, there's a lot that happened. And you mentioned this earlier. There's the business. Everything's different in this day and era. There's a lot of bad things that are going on. And I'm just hoping that someone that's looking to get in the industry will read my book and just see how I went about doing. I had the right people behind me. I didn't have people that were representing me that were from the streets. And in this day and era, girls have to be really careful about who they interact with. And
right. The industry has changed, and you were very fortunate to be in it at the time you were, because it's not the same now.
I even had some scary things that I went through in the industry, but I can't imagine now in 2024 coming out to Los Angeles and, they don't even shoot movies like they used to. When I was doing movies, they would be shooting a movie, at least 10 or 20 movies a day.
Yeah. So, well, listen, we're out of time. We got to go. But Dominique Simone, thank you so much. We're taking an hour out of your time to be with us. And I recommend everyone buy your book, A Star is Born.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you for having me on the show. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, Pearl.
Yeah.
What be next?
Magic Matt Allen and the Demons of Decadence, live from the Lighten Up Lounge on LRRadioLive.com.
St. Peter.